Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. Senators owner Eugene Melnick stated the franchise could look to relocate if current conditions in Ottawa don't improve. He's seeking money to refurbish Canadian Tire Center or build a new arena in downtown Ottawa. The team is currently 10-13-7 and in last place in the Eastern Conference. Former world number one Victoria Azarenka has been granted a wild card for the Australian Open. The two-time women's singles champion is currently ranked 210th and has played in only two tournaments in the past 19 months after giving birth to her first child in December of 2016. And American John Henry Kruger has qualified for the U.S. Olympic short track speed skating team 4 years after missing out on a place on the Sochi team after coming down with swine flu. Kruger has won 5 World Cup medals in his past 4 years. Today we have Matt Reed, Steve Clark, Jeff Klein, and Stefan Phil, y'all. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game.
Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in a fabulous Las Vegas, always feeling great out in Oakland, California. My good buddy Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Clayton. Good to be here, bud.
Also in the studio today have Jeff Klein in from L.A. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks, Clayton. Welcome, Matt. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Matt.
Yes, sir.
How about that John Henry Kruger, huh? Getting into the Olympics after the swine flu? What a terrible time to get the swine flu, like days before Sochi.
You hear people overcoming amazing feats. That's just almost on the top of the list, right?
That's what the Olympics are all about, the swine flu, overcoming. And, hey, how about Victoria Azarenka? She's going to get in the Australian Open, Matt. I know you love to see her play. And other news out of Australia, Serena Williams, although she has not committed to playing in the Australian Open, she has applied for and been approved for her visa and has officially entered the tournament, although she said she reserves the right to withdraw.
I hope we see her down there. Nothing like seeing Serena start off her year, right?
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. Hopefully we see her in there. Tennis is always better with Serena Williams. But I think it's just a reality that you have to get all that paperwork in ahead of time. So she hasn't made a decision, but if she's listening, I really encourage her to join the Australian Open.
Yes, Serena, I know you have nothing else to do on Saturday morning. Listen to us. Maybe she'll catch the podcast, lvsportsnetwork.com. But we love us some Serena Williams. Very excited about the Australian Open. But today, Matt, is a pretty big day here in Las Vegas, and that is Las Vegas Bowl Day. Boise State and Oregon, which means college football, which means Steve Clark going out to Tennessee. Welcome in, Steve.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great, man. You know, one of these years, you have got to come out here to enjoy the Las Vegas Bowl and the fabulous brunch and luncheon that goes along with it.
Hey, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. One day I'll make it out there to the left, almost the left coast. But, until then, I'll stay here in Tennessee and enjoy some Music City Bowl and some Liberty Bowl and And we still play some good football out here in the Southeast.
Well, the Las Vegas Bowl, Steve, going to have Oregon and Boise State. Oregon at a bit of a crossroads. They had Willie Taggart as their head coach in there for one season. All expectations were high. He bolts for Florida State. In comes Coach Cristobal to coach today's game, and he's going to stay on. Thoughts on the Ducks today?
Yeah, you know, that we get to see how the Mario Cristobal era at Oregon starts with a bowl game, you know. And let's go back to when we had a first-time head coach playing against a Boise State team and Chip Kelly. You know, that didn't work out too well for the Ducks, but, you know, it turned out for Chip Kelly to be all right, won three Pac-12 championships there. But the key for the Ducks today is quarterback Justin Herbert. You know, the Ducks started the season 4-1, and then Herbert broke his collarbone on the end of September versus Cal. And without him, you know, they were 1-4 with 15 points per game. You know, with Herbert in there running the offense, they were 6-1 at 51 points a game. So, you know, the Ducks have gone as far as he's taken them. You know, they're also aided by an eighth-ranked nationally rushing attack led by Royce Freeman, who is going to be a very high draft pick. But, you know, it's all about Herbert and what he can do with that offense. I'm back and forth on this one. I'm not sure. Oregon looks pretty good. They're the favorite in the game, 7.5 points, I think. But Boise's got a way of just showing up and winning these games. You know, they're very familiar with the Las Vegas Bowl. They won three straight. And you know, Coach Brian Harrison, he's 1-4. I'm sorry, 4-1 versus the Pac-12.
Well, Matt, coming into this, the Bronco defense allowing 22.5 points per game, forced 26 turnovers. The big news is, though, Royce Freeman not going to play today, going to sit out, going to do the Christian McCaffrey, the Leonard Fournette. The line has jumped from where it was at 7.5. It's been down to 7, 6.5 in some places. That's a big lift for Boise State.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking Freeman, who was one of the best running backs in the country. So that's a big loss for Oregon. Like Steve said, though, I think this offense is really about Herbert, and obviously having that running game helps. But, I mean, Oregon couldn't move the ball without him. And, it really showed down the stretch there. So, you know, losing Freeman hurts, but gaining Herbert is an advantage for them. But I don't know. I don't know if they're good enough to beat Boise State. I like Boise State with the points. I think Rippon has done a solid job. I think the big thing with Boise State is, you know, both sides of the ball. Defensively they're solid. Offensively they're solid. They take care of the football. I never like these games for the Pac-12 team that comes in and it feels like, you know, almost a consolation game for them, as where you're getting the Mountain West winner coming in and being pumped up and ready for these games. So I just think it means a little more to Boise State. I know Cristobal in his first game wants to get things rolling, but usually easier said than done. So I like Boise State in this one.
You know, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, Royce Freeman and Justin Herbert on Oregon's side. I think, you know, Boise State has some questions coming into this game as well. They're pretty banged up. Alexander Madison and Jake Rowe, two of their key offensive guys, are just really question marks as far as ankle injuries, lower leg injuries. So will Boise State have enough? I think Oregon under Herbert still has enough offense to really lead them to a win. And it's really on Boise State to get some turnovers, take the ball away. That's really when they're at their best. They're one of the top teams in the country as far as takeaways. So if Boise can get that done, then I do think they have a chance.
Yeah, Madison going to be a little bit of a game time decision, Steve. Now, clearly last night, on piggybacking what Matt had said, Boise State easily won the pep rally at Fremont Street, and I think the crowd is probably going to be about 70-75% Boise State. The rodeo is in town. They sold a lot of dual tickets, Steve, so it should be a pretty good atmosphere, and we know that Boise State likes to rise to the occasion.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a pretty good move by the marketers there to bundle those tickets with the rodeo for the all the cowboys that come down from Boise. You know, but, you know, it's... like I said, Boise has a way of just showing up in these games. And, you know, they've got a really good defense. You know, Leighton Vander Esch leads that defense. You know, and they are ranked 20th against the run. They've only allowed 200 yards rushing once this season. You know, everything says on paper that Oregon's got this game, and they're going to give it handily. But Boise's just got a way of showing up. You know, let's not forget the game against Oklahoma. They're 3-0 in the Fiesta Bowl on a national stage, so the big time doesn't scare them at all. I'm going Boise State in this game. I really like Boise, and I don't think they're just going to cover. I think, you know, I mean, they're not just going to beat the spread. They're going to win the game.
I think a real good chance, Matt, of an outright win for Boise State, just like Steve said, even with Oregon debuting a brand new, never before seen helmet today. But that's not going to be enough. I think Boise State, they want to be in this game. They want to win this game. And, I fear for Coach Cristobal that he's going to get off on the wrong foot. But let's talk a little bit about Oregon, Matt, because we saw them go all the way to the national championship. There was a stretch in the Chip Kelly era where they were the hottest ticket in town and a program on the rise. It's taken a step back in the past few years. Is Oregon still a good job and a good program?
Yeah, Oregon is still a good job and a great program. Anytime you have Phil Knight, the owner of Nike, behind the program like that, I mean, you're going to have top facilities. Everything's going to be top notch. So for a coach to go there, I mean, he can offer, you know, recruits a lot where other programs, I know there's, you know, the big programs are kind of all the same, but some of the smaller programs, especially like in Oregon State, I would say, can't offer the same thing that Oregon's going to offer. As far as facilities and swag, like, you know, everyone loves those swag. I know you love talking about the uniforms. You got the uniforms. But, yeah, for a coach to come in, you know, you can still pull talent. I think Chip Kelly, you know, what he did with that offense kind of was revolutionary at the time, and it really caught a lot of people off guard. So Oregon kind of had their little run to prominence. This year, though, they're playing good football with Herbert, and I think, you know, Taggart would come in and the offense looked good, and I think that's, you know, that's one of Taggart's strong points. So we'll see with Cristobal. I think in Oregon you need an offensive-minded coach. I don't think it's so much about the defense there. So, you know, Cristobal is going to come in, but it's a prominent job. It's a big-time job. Like I said, with Phil Knight behind it, it's something that's going to be there for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. I do think it's still a big program, and it's a really attractive program. One disadvantage for Oregon is that they don't have a kind of a depth of talent to recruit from in the state of Oregon, unlike a place like maybe California and Florida, where there's a lot of players at the lower levels before they get to college. But I think with that money and the facilities that exist, and how much attention Nike's put on that program, I do think it's really attractive, and they need that to really compete in the Pac-12 against programs that are really on the rise, like in Washington.
What, you know, Jeff makes a good point, Steve, about the recruiting for Oregon. And what is the Chip Kelly effect with him going to UCLA, that not only does he now have access to all of the traditional UCLA haunts, but he still knows that Oregon, and he knows Washington and Idaho, the Northwest, where he used to poach kids there for Oregon, and now he might be going up to some of those same old haunts and bringing those kids to Westwood.
Yeah, it's absolutely a big slap. Well, not a slap, but it's going to be a hindrance for Coach Cristobal, who, you know, it's I'm just not really sold on this guy for this job. You know, he's the former head coach at Florida International. 27-47 record, which is unimpressive, for one conference championship. And from 2007 to 2012, he only had two seasons over 500. In the state of Florida, where there's a ton of talent to go around for all the schools they have there, you know, and now, you know, you've got Kelly down in Westwood, you know, and like you said, he's familiar with the area, and he's going to be able to go up there and poach the players that he wants that could have been considering going to Eugene, you know, and now they're going to come to Southern California because, you know, Chip Kelly's just a bigger name than Mario Cristobal. And, you know, I think we could see Oregon stay middle of the pack in the Pac-12 North for for a little while, Cristobal's got his work cut out for him, because he's facing teams like Stanford, Washington State. And, like you said, Oregon's taken a step back the past couple of years. It wasn't too long ago they were in the college football playoff championship game. But, they had a special guy named Marcus Mariota at quarterback there. And you're going to get your Marcus Mariotas of the future that are considering going south to play for somebody like Chip Kelly.
Steve describes the situation in Oregon, which I think maybe the coach is a great fit for them. Steve's saying, and I think he's echoing what a lot of people are thinking about Cristobal not being the right coach. Is this really someone that can help this program? And I think Oregon's really operated with a bit of a chip on its shoulder, no pun intended. And maybe Cristobal also operates with a chip on his shoulder, wanting to prove that they can win. Let's remember, Oregon's won 10 or more games under 3 different coaches. So they've been a successful program, and maybe they feel like they don't get the national respect that they deserve.
And they were going to have to rally around something like that, Matt, because I think when you look at that Pac-12 North and you know that Stanford and Washington are sort of always going to be there, you don't know how much longer Mike Leach is going to be in Washington State before he moves on to a better job. But you have to worry about a program like Utah that might be a more attractive place for people to go than Oregon right now.
Yeah, it's definitely something you have to think about. Like you said, Washington, Stanford are going to be good. Utah has seemed to be prominent over the last, decade, even a little further than that when, Alex Smith and Urban Meyer got things going over there. But, again, what Oregon can offer with the facilities, with Phil Knight and what the boosters are going to put behind it, I mean, that's a college town. That's a college football town. They live for the Ducks. I don't think that's ever going to change. And for me, I think I'm going to take a step back, and I want to see really what Chip Kelly is going to have to offer UCLA, because I think we're thinking of Chip Kelly at Oregon really lighting it up. Well, it's been a few years, and I think, if he doesn't have anything fresh, if he doesn't have anything new, I don't know how exciting it's really going to be, and I don't know if he really is that strong of a name to come pulling guys away from Oregon. I still think the Ducks, and just that whole nature up there has the ability to stay strong. And I don't think they're going to lose a ton of recruits to any of the other schools.
Steve, looking over at Boise State in the future of the Mountain West, they for a long time were the next conference on the rise. The whole conference as a whole has seemed to take a step back. What is the future of the Mountain West and their national prominence?
Well, the future of the Mountain West is Boise State. Since they've come over there. Well, I mean, Boise State, for the better part of 20 years, they've been a very respectable program. 16 straight bowl games now, has competed for or won a conference championship 12 of the last 18 years. And there's really nobody else in the Mountain Division that's going to jump up and challenge them. Wyoming's going to be there a little bit. Colorado State's touch and go. So, I'm going to go ahead and say that your Mountain West Division Championship game is going to be Boise State versus Fresno State or San Diego State for the next 5 years. It's what you're going to see out of the Mountain West Conference for the time being.
Yeah, and Matt, there's always this sort of hope for UNLV that maybe when the Raiders get here and the stadium goes and the facilities are better, that UNLV can have some sort of relevance. They've just been a train wreck for 35 years. Any shot for UNLV to capitalize on the new facilities and the brand recognition with the Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really big shot for them that they have to kind of ride that momentum. Hopefully the Raiders bring some momentum. I mean, what the Raiders are doing this year has been bad. So if they do bring that momentum, yeah, the big facilities, the big draw, turn it into a football town, I think they can start to recruit and get a few guys in there that are better. But like you said, it's been bad for a long time. So the rebuild's going to take a while, but that would be the momentum to get something started would be with the NFL coming in, the new facilities, and really trying to pump that up.
Yeah, Clayton, you bring up a great point. I think that there's really a sports renaissance going on in Vegas, not just with the Raiders, but you know, Golden Knights and now the Las Vegas Aces, and just a lot more attention. And hopefully, I think if UNLV is going to have any opportunity to really get over that hump and turn the corner, I think this is great time.
Yeah, and if the Mountain West is going to be relevant, again, they're going to need San Diego State to figure out their stadium situation, for San Diego State to be good, for Boise State to be good, for Fresno State to be good, for UNLV to be good, for perhaps New Mexico to at least be serviceable, or the Mountain West could continue to slide back. Thank you, Steve. Enjoy bowl season. I know that this is your most favorite time of the year. When we come back, Jeff and Matt and I are going to dive into everything that happened at the winter meetings. Baseball pitchers and catchers reporting sooner rather than later, guys. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Joe Fan Show and on the web at joefanshow.com.
For live interaction and sports chat, follow Clayton on Twitter at Clayton_JoeFan.
Limited mobility, stress, pain. These are things we don't have to learn to live with. The Las Vegas Pain Relief Center will get you started on taking an active approach to your health. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated team have been serving our community for more than a decade to help Las Vegans resolve their pain and perform at their very best. Through the use of active relief techniques, they can treat the cause of your pain instead of just chasing the symptoms. Visit their website at LasVegasPainReliefCenter.com or call them at 702-948-2520 to learn more about chiropractic, corrective patterning, personal training, and massage therapies used by professional athletes. LasVegasPainReliefCenter.com. Don't settle for feeling good when you can feel great.
Looking for a high-quality wood bat for your summer league game?
Want to make a home run impression at your next award presentation? Visit PhoenixBats.com.
Phoenix Bats has been proudly crafting premium game bats and award bats right here in the USA since 1996.
Approved for use by players in major and minor leagues since 2000, each and every Phoenix bat meets the same high standards for wood quality.
This ain't no big box sports store bat, it's a Phoenix bat.
Get yours at PhoenixBats.com.
Welcome back to the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. Clayton Hamilton and Jeff Klein here in a Las Vegas. Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. And Matt, hard to believe that baseball season right around the corner, but we're about 7 weeks or so away from pitchers and catchers reporting. Winter meetings just happened, some free agent signings, some big trades, so lots to get into.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's start with the Angels. And it's good that we have Jeff here from Los Angeles, right down the five in Anaheim, Orange County, Tustin. The Angels trying to make a big splash, as they often do, like every 3 years. They're like, hey, we've been crap. Let's go spend a lot of money and get some players. They got Shohei Ohtani. That was the big deal out of Japan. And then they weren't done. They went and got a couple of infielders, bringing in Ian Kinsler and Zach Cozart. Who would have thought we'd live in a world that Zach Cozart would get $38 million?
Yeah, I think these moves are a little bit different than what we've seen from the Angels in the past. They've been a team that got enamored with big names. Josh Hamilton, CJ Wilson, the hot ticket of the season. They go and they offer that player a lot of money. There's more depth moves taking place, and this is a new GM. DePoto was the one who made a lot of those big name moves. Billy Epler has a different approach. He's invested a lot more in international signings. He made a really big push, as you mentioned, for Shohei Ohtani, and it paid off. And that was a huge coup for him. The Angels were not expected to be any of the favorites to land him. So I think it's shown creativity on the Angels' part, and I really like these moves. I like them way more than going out and grabbing those big names. Zach Cozart is not a name everyone knows unless you follow baseball pretty closely or you lived in Cincinnati. He's someone who's a very solid player, and he fits in with what they're trying to do. Let's remember what worked for the Angels last year. Strong defense behind a pitching staff that's not going to really blow you away. And that's really the formula that the Angels are going with. They now have arguably the best defensive infield, and I think that's really to their advantage, and it's going to help that team be really competitive this year.
So, Matt, when you look at this lineup and you've got Trout and Kinsler and Upton and Pujols and Cron and Calhoun, what I still can't get away from is when you look out on the mound and you've got Luke Bard, Jaime Barria, Jake Jewell, Kenyon Middleton, Eduardo Paredes, Felix Pena, no Ramirez. Really?
Yeah, really. Like Jeff said, their whole philosophy is play good defense because the pitchers are going to let the guys hit. And then, yeah, it's not a strong philosophy, and it's not going to hold up. And it's funny, you go through that lineup, too, and you mention pretty much everyone with a right-handed bat. I guess Ohtani and Calhoun would be the only guys hitting left-handed. So that's a righty-heavy lineup. But, yeah, like you said, on the mound, I think it's five innings and pray to get it to the bullpen. That's the only way they're gonna win games is, if the pitchers can hold up at the beginning of the game long enough, because they'll score runs, but how many runs are they gonna give up? But they're playing for second place in their division anyway right now. I think Houston's too strong and will be too strong for the next couple of years, but I don't even see them as a wild card team even with all these moves.
You know, obviously, we need to see the rest of the moves they make. I think they're going in the right direction. I do think they can compete for the wild card they did last season. So they're a better team coming to this year. If Ohtani is close to what he's been billed, he's obviously, you don't know what international players are going to be like when they come over to the majors. But if he goes at the top of that rotation or is on par with Garrett Richards, and Garrett Richards is healthy, I really like Andrew Heaney. The further away he gets from his major surgery, he'll be a very solid player. And Shoemaker's looked, I think he's been one of the more underrated pitchers the last couple seasons. So I think the rotation is good enough. And I think the defense will really help them, as I mentioned, be competitive. And I agree with you, Clayton, on the bullpen, though. That's a huge question mark for me. But bullpens are so erratic, guys can emerge out of nowhere, and sometimes you can find value in really unheralded guys.
All I know, Matt, is this Angel pitching staff is so bad that Fernando Rodney said, no thank you, I'd rather go to Minnesota.
I think that's all needs to be said right there, huh?
That is I can't go any further with the Angels. Let's talk about the Orioles, though, and Manny Machado, who the Orioles seem to want to trade all the time. And Jeff, is that because he doesn't want to do a long-term extension? He wants to see what his value is. He wants to play shortstop. He wants to fight with the Red Sox. Like, what does he want to do?
Well, we know he said he wants to play shortstop. Whether that means he's with the Orioles or it's with another team, he said he really wants to play shortstop. And any team that's going to get him or keep him, they want a happy Manny Machado, so he'll probably be playing shortstop. The really interesting thing about all this back and forth with Manny Machado is we found out just how much Peter Angelos, the Orioles owner, hates the Yankees. He's put it out there that he does not want to trade Manny Machado to the Yankees, and he wants a guarantee that any team Manny Machado gets traded to will not turn around and trade him to the Yankees. I'm not sure how you can get that guarantee. It's been rumored that he even wants an agreement put in writing. I don't really know how that would work out. It's very unusual. So the Yankees aside, it's an unusual situation. Machado doesn't want to sign an extension. He wants to be a one-year player if he gets traded, or stick it out with the Orioles. It seems foolish if the Orioles are now committing to rebuilding to keep Manny Machado, because why would you if you're not planning on being competitive? So it's an interesting situation. They've kind of put themselves in a corner where it's going to be difficult to trade Manny Machado unless they let go of some of their requirements.
The thing that I don't get with Manny Machado, Matt, is all the rumors are that he's gone to the White Sox. And does anybody on this planet other than Hawk Harrelson think the White Sox are one player away from being relevant?
No one that I know does. I mean, this
It started with Stanton, obviously. You know, they were dumping salary, and he goes to the Yankees, and now everyone's looking and saying, you know, who's the next guy? And it's Machado and Harper. Well, obviously, Washington's not going to trade Harper, and they're going to hope to re-sign him. But I think Baltimore knows that Machado's probably not coming back, so they have to go out and get whatever they can get. And, I mean, if it means trade him to the White Sox, so be it. And the White Sox will take a one-year rental and maybe try to, you know, hope that Abreu, you know, bounces back and has a big year, and maybe they sneak into a wild card. But again, yeah, a lot of pipe dreams for these teams right now that, you know, on paper they hope to put something together, but realistically it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think with the White Sox, more than being competitive, they wanted to – I don't think they believe they're anywhere close to being to competing this year, even with a big player like Machado. So I think they're looking to trade him, at, you know, put some fans in the seats the first half, trade him at the deadline, get something back. And they probably looked at the prospects they would give up for Machado and feel they can upgrade at the trade deadline, because teams will be a lot more desperate for players with injuries and so forth that come about during the season. But, you know, it's a tough situation because it's, you know, I think the Orioles are looking to get back a huge return for Machado, and that just may not happen with all these restrictions and Machado's restrictions and everything out there.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens to Manny Machado. And I want to get into the Phillies with you guys next week, because I think they could be a really interesting mix. But you would have to think, Jeff, that Manny Machado could win the shortstop battle between Eliezer Alvarez, Cesar Hernandez, Yasmuel Valentin, and J.P. Crawford.
I'm sure he could, but and then some guys maybe even a little better than them. But I mean, the Phillies aren't going to win this year either. They've been signing some interesting players, so we'll see. It'd be good to talk about that.
Yeah, I can't wait to jump into the Phillies, especially with the Carlos Santana signing. We'll see what they do over the next couple of weeks, but the Phillies will be a fun talk. When we come back, Stefan Filial got up early to join us. He's going to come and talk all things Oklahoma City and the New York Knicks. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game.
Music provided by country sensation Buckstein. For albums, tour dates, and merchandise, check them out at Buckstein.net.
Knock pain out at the source. Dr. John Petrick of the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center has been caring for the best combat athletes in the world for the past 14 seasons on the hit reality series The Ultimate Fighter. Unfortunately, pain doesn't just happen in the octagon. If you suffer from headaches, neck pain, shoulder injuries, carpal tunnel, back spasms, hip and knee pain, disc problems, and nerve-related issues, the dedicated team at the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center in Henderson uses the same active release techniques on you that target the cause of pain instead of just chasing the symptoms. Dr. Petrick will have you feeling like a champion and ready to tackle whatever confronts you in the octagon of life. Visit Dr. Petrick at LasVegasPainReliefCenter.com or call 702-948-2520 to set up an appointment. Don't settle for feeling good when you can feel great.
Looking for a high-quality wood bat for your summer league game?
Want to make a home run impression at your next award presentation? Visit PhoenixBats.com.
Phoenix Bats has been proudly crafting premium game bats and award bats right here in the USA since 1996.
Approved for use by players in major and minor leagues since 2000, each and every Phoenix bat meets the same high standards for wood quality.
This ain't no big box sports store bat, it's a Phoenix bat.
Get yours at PhoenixBats.com.
Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvaprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton and Jeff Klein here in a fabulous Las Vegas. Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. And back from weeks on the road, Stefan Filial surviving his trek through the Free Republic of Texas and has rejoined us here in the studio to talk a little basketball. And I hope when you were down there in Texas, you got to see some red-hot Houston Rockets with the return of Chris Paul, and I guess he and Harden can play okay together.
I wish it was hot where I was. It was snowing.
It was snowing.
I definitely wasn't around
the panhandle.
Oh man, I was in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, it's good to be back. I feel home, and I'm looking forward to catching up on some basketball.
Well, home is
the theme of the day. The homecoming tour of the Oklahoma City Thunder continues. Paul George, Indiana, now Carmelo Anthony making the triumphant return to Madison Square Garden later this afternoon.
Yeah, but I have to say my homecoming is a little more anticipated.
Yeah, that's true. I would, given my choice between hanging out with you or Carmelo Anthony or Paul George, I would always choose you, Stephon.
Oh, why, thank you. Thank you. I don't know if they're going to
play. Maybe Paul George more than Carmelo Anthony. Like,
oh, yeah, I like PG.
Like, I would invite him out with us. I don't know about Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
His wife annoys me.
Well, we won't go there.
We won't go there. No, I spent 2 months with her. She annoys me.
So Melo, I mean, I don't think he'll really get the welcome back video that other guys get. But I do see them cheering him on because of the way that he went out and the fight that he had to try to stay there. I think a lot of the fans were behind him on it. But, I mean, this just reflects, just like when he got traded by Denver. The team improves. Mm-hmm. The ball moves, and guys get better.
Does Spike Lee, Matt, wear the Melo jersey today?
Probably. I would say he throws it on just out of a show of respect. Although, like Stephon said, I think Melo is a scorer. He can score the basketball. He can rebound. He defends a little bit, but in the whole scheme of things, he usually brings your franchise down, and it takes you a few years to recover. And the Knicks are on their way to recovering, but. Look at OKC. I mean, they got the big win last night, but there's questions already about can these three coexist, and I don't know what the answer is yet.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, it's really can they coexist for this year. I mean, Melo is doing career lows in minutes, field goal percentages, and assists, free throw percentage, and points. I mean, he's at his career average in rebounds, but you don't see that chemistry building, and I don't think they're really going to have the time to build that chemistry. I mean, I see Paul George leaving. I don't think he looks comfortable. He's just playing the PC role.
And you talk about them trying to coexist for a year, mm-hmm. and the question is to what end? For a first-round exit against Golden State or Houston or San Antonio?
Possibly, if they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, Steven Adams has been probably one of their best players on the team. And, I mean, he's not a three-point threat. And that's what you need in the Western Conference. Especially with the Rockets mowing through the Western Conference, and you got the Warriors, they're going to be there. The Spurs, who lost to the Rockets the other night. I mean, it's right now they're just trying to be competitive. And against a young team like Philly, they went in triple overtime. And, I mean, I don't see that as a boost to their team, but they got to start putting stuff together.
Yeah, I mean, basketball's a unique sport in that chemistry matters so much. You know, it's a lot of other teams, the talent can sometimes overcome bad chemistry. I think in basketball, with the way the ball moves and sort of how guys are spaced around the floor and knowing or trying to anticipate or support your teammate on the floor, it's really unique to basketball. And I did not like the Thunder getting Carmelo Anthony. I did not think that was an improvement. I mean, they have some other problems that really got masked by last year by the exceptional work of Russell Westbrook. But I think the Knicks have gotten better, addition through subtraction, and the Thunder took on a lot of the bad habits that really the Knicks showed last season.
Matt, is Russell Westbrook really is he Sammy Davis Jr.? And what I mean by that is he's such a good dancer that he's hindered by a partner, that he's best to just let him be on the stage by himself as opposed to having to deal with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw that last year. I mean, OKC was not a good team last year, yet Russell Westbrook single-handedly put him on his back and carried him to the playoffs. I mean, he is that guy where he needs the ball in his hands. He can create for other guys. I don't think he needs stars around them. He needs solid players around them that can make shots when they're open, but he doesn't need other guys to be able to create. He needs the ball in his hands and just let him go. And I think
We've seen him be a little more aggressive over the last 2 weeks, I would say, where he is kind of taking that control back a little bit. Yeah, he's not a get guys going first and get himself going. He's get himself going, and then guys will kind of come in afterwards. So, yeah, I think they're better off without the two stars there and letting him just play.
I wouldn't mind Paul George being there. I think that helps. I think it's just the mellow factor, to be honest, because his whole thing is holding the ball. And if Russell Westbrook is penetrating and he passes the ball and Melo doesn't have the shot, the ball's not moving. Russ, I would prefer him with role players, with the exception of Paul George, because I think he can play that higher level of a role player and come through in tight situations. And that's what Russ was missing when he had just role players, because they're so much dependent on them, and they haven't really proven to actually take it to that next level where Paul George has. You know, you need guys who can fill in that position and still take it up another level.
Clayton.
One of the things before we move on from this, though, that it just came to me, Stefan, would both franchises be better, and I know this won't ever happen, but would both franchises be better if Mike Conley and Russell Westbrook were traded straight up? Because Conley could exist and play really well with George and Anthony, and Russell Westbrook would kind of left on his own in Memphis.
Yeah, I don't really like that. I mean, I'm being hard on Melo, but I think it's him. Because Mike Conley being there, it'll be the same thing, really. Because once Melo touches the ball, things change. And I don't think that helps Mike Conley, who can play off the ball pretty really well. Russell Westbrook, he'd work in Memphis for sure. Honestly, I think Melo would probably work best on a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, where he can just sit there and shoot. Just like a Chris Middleton used to. I mean, granted, Chris Middleton was better in defense, but he can hit the corner shot. He can place his spots on the floor better, because you got Giannis, you got guys that can also penetrate. They're getting better in shooting, with Tony Snell being like the highest 3-point shooter in the league right now, which is crazy. But Melo needs a team where everybody else is hyperactive and he can be a spot up guy.
Clayton, I just want to tell you I love the Sammy Davis Jr. reference.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Are we going to call Russell Westbrook Mr. Bojangles from now on?
We could.
That's pretty awesome.
We very well could. Yeah, but I just seem like that. He just doesn't seem like a guy that likes to have other people getting attention.
Maybe that's
okay with him, that he can have a career without a championship and maybe without a deep run where he puts up really big numbers and then goes to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's alpha for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see him get a championship. I don't see it happening unless he goes to, I don't know, like later in his career, they team up and all that stuff. But
when you look at a game like today, Matt, where the Oklahoma City goes to the Thunder, Or the Oklahoma City goes to the Knicks. How big of a game is this for the Knicks? And now we may or may not see Kristaps Porzingis, but for the psyche of them to sort of free themselves from Melo, to have him return and beat him.
It would be nice, but I don't think it's necessary. I think the Melo era is gone. I think, you know, I'm not in New York, but I mean, out here, no one talks about Melo ever, you know, about the Knicks or what, you know, he's doing now. So I don't know how big of it is, you know, back there. Yeah, they probably, there were some Melo haters that they would love, you know, to beat him tonight. I wouldn't be surprised. He's going to play, but with them playing triple overtime last night, and I think he played 48 minutes, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see as much of Melo tonight as we normally would. But yeah, without Porzingis, they're going to have a tough time, which is unfortunate.
Clayton, you're from New York, and you know sports fans from New York. They have a long memory.
Yes.
And they love to hate players that they don't like. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of hate tonight.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a a warm reception.
No, I think so, because the way he went out, because the whole Phil Jackson saga. I think it was like Phil Jackson versus the city of New York, and Melo was on the side of the city of New York. Mm-hmm. And you know, we saw how Jackson tried to get rid of Porzingis before he went out. I think that's what saves Melo. The Knicks team, Frank Ntilikina, he's a really good rookie. Guys are getting opportunities to prove themselves now that Melo is gone. And even Michael Beasley, who, thank goodness, he's not trying to be the star of a team. He's actually playing good basketball. Enes Kanter has become that guy that they wanted Joakim Noah to be, but he's healthy. And so I think this Knicks team does have a positive upside, but the reception with Melo, I mean, it's going to be competitive for sure, but I think Melo's going to have a little nostalgia returning.
You know, I agree with you sort of, Stefan, because I think they do put a lot of blame on Phil Jackson, and he turned in sort of the villain, but I think they group Melo in Jackson's camp as far as, you know, the love, hate, you know, the relationship the city has with the team and with players. So I don't think there's going to be a warm reception. I agree with you that it's the Phil Jackson era that they're really unhappy with, but I think he's sort of a product of that, and they're not happy with that.
Mm, we'll see. I mean, he is from New York. Mm.
Yeah, I just feel like it's like a big weight when he left, and mm-hmm. and they're very just happy to see him gone, and I don't know how I think they want to beat him.
But yeah, that could play into their warm reception. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're from New York, you came here, you're gone now, we're playing well, oh, we'll be nice to you.
I think the lost guy in this whole thing, Matt, has been Kanter, and that he has found a really good role that maybe there wasn't space for him to do all of the things that he does now when he was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think in Oklahoma City, you know, they were trying to groom Adams a little bit, and so, yeah, there wasn't that space there. Plus, Billy Donovan wasn't really happy with his defense. I think his defense has improved a little bit in New York, but yeah, he's carved out a nice role where, you know, he rebounds the basketball. He probably averages 4 points just on putbacks, which, I mean, if you can offensive rebound, you can find a place in the league. And yeah, he's done a nice job of giving that team some scoring when they need it. And he is a guy that on any night, you know, he can go for 20, even 30 points on the night. So it's been good for, like you said, they got rid of Carmelo and they actually got a piece that's given them, something that they needed, which is some low post scoring.
No, I think also it's important to recognize Hardaway, second leading scorer on the team, points per game. So I think there's a lot of pieces that are really coming together well, and it goes back to what we've been talking about with Melo and teams in the ball. It doesn't really spread around the court. It has to flow through Melo.
Yeah, I mean, he's got Tim Hardaway just needs to stay healthy. I mean, that's really all he's got to do. He's not going to be the superstar that the Knicks want him to be, but he can be that next level role player that I was speaking about earlier.
And I feel like hopefully they'll get somebody that can help Porzingis, you know, so he doesn't turn into Dirk, who has spent his whole career trying to find somebody to take the burden off of him. And I, right now, I don't know that they necessarily have that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's comfortable with it right now. I think he likes that responsibility. He likes the pressure, and I think he plays better under pressure. He just needs that guard, you know, that 1-2 punch to help him. But right now, he's cruising along and he's just getting better.
All right, Thunder at Knicks, the return of Carmelo Anthony to MSG. So certainly have eyes on that one today. When we come back, little Q&A time. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Joe Fan Show and on the web at joefanshow.com.
The Las Vegas Pain Relief Center in Henderson. Are you suffering from back, hip, neck, or knee pain? Dr. John Petrick and the team at the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center are ready to help you move more freely and feel better. Want to get your golf swing back? Improve your tennis serve? Be able to catch that grounder that got between your legs. Visit LasVegasPainReliefCenter.com to take the first step toward a pain-free day. The Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, 702-948-2520. Don't settle for feeling good when you could feel great.
It's time for Q&A. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us at submissions@JoeFanShow.com or tweet us at JoeFanShow. Clayton Hamilton, Jeff Klein, Stephon Phil, y'all here in the studio in Las Vegas, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. And let's go to the mailbox. AJ here in Las Vegas asks, will the Oilers fire Todd McClellan before the All-Star break? Hashtag got to get gone.
Before the All-Star, no, I think he hangs in there a little longer. They got off to a slow start. You know, they've been up and down all year, but I think they ride it out a little longer.
I would give him till this time next year, to be honest. But the way this coaching things work, if you're going to try to go younger, yeah, I mean, why not start now? Like, get rid of them, because once you start a rhythm, momentum, and then you're looking next year to get younger, I mean, it could disrupt things.
Will they? I'm not sure. Should they? Yeah. They have a lot of talent, and, you know, with McDavid and Talbot, team's just not getting it done right now. They're 13 and 17, and they should be a lot better than that. So they want to put fans back in the seats. They want to give the team a fighting chance through the rest of the season. I think they should.
I think they should dump him right now. Like, forget about by the All-Star break. Yeah. It's time to make a break. You got to shake stuff up. And if you're holding on to, oh, well, if this team's going to get better, he's still not the right guy to lead them once they get better, because they were better last year, mm-hmm. and he did everything in his power to lose the playoff series, which he lost to Anaheim last year. Get gone, Todd McClellan. Although I like it, because they're in the Golden Knights division, and so let them screw up there in Edmonton as much as possible. All right, Sid here in Las Vegas asks, who would you rather be right now, the Falcons or the Seahawks? Hashtag wild card.
I mean, right now I'd rather be the Seahawks, just because you're playing for the division this week at home against the Rams. And I think with the Falcons, and, you know, they still are contending with Carolina and New Orleans. They still have to go to New Orleans. And I think, you know, with Kamara getting hurt last time, it really hindered New Orleans, and they still had a chance to beat them. So I think the Seahawks are in the better boat here, especially the way Russell Wilson's playing. I think, you know, the MVP, in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually chose the Falcons for kind of going down the same line you did, Matt, but for opposite reasons. Like, I like the fact that they're playing, they have a tougher road going into the end of the season. I mean, it can build momentum.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. Seahawks, for all the reasons you cited. Also, it feels like the Rams are starting to slow a little bit with the injuries mounting. Seahawks are picking up steam.
I would rather be the Falcons, because I think they have better talent. Hmm. And I think when things go bad in Seattle, they go worse than when they go bad in Atlanta. So
yeah,
I think I would rather be the Falcons. All right, Jason here in Henderson asks, which ranked college basketball team should be on upset alert today? Hashtag underdogs.
I would say Kentucky's got their hands full of Virginia Tech today. Virginia Tech can just flat out score. So Kentucky's upset alert today, Rupp Arena.
Oh, man. It's a lot of games today. I go with Notre Dame and Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I like that. I like those good old Hoosiers, baby.
I'm going with Clemson upset number 22, Florida. Florida just seems like they're been struggling a bit lately, so Clemson, I like them. I think they have a lot of talent, more than they're getting respect for.
Two things I am not surprised by in this question, Matt. One, that Jeff picks Clemson to win. And two, that you pick Kentucky
to lose
against a Virginia Tech team, because Virginia Tech is a good basketball team, Matt. And Kentucky has been sketchy as of late. I'm with you.
Say that earlier all the time, though.
Yeah, it is early. It is Kentucky. Like I said, they like to lose and then get better. But yeah, I'm with you, Matt. Virginia Tech today for me. Thank you for listening to the Joe Fan Show. For Steve Clark, Matt Reed, Stephon Filial, Jeff Kleinsman, Clayton Hamilton. Enjoy the games. We'll see you next week right here on NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game.